Deluge. It takes Goto Dango about half a minute to waddle up the narrow entrance of the tunnel. He is trailing the fingers of one hand along the stone ceiling just above his head, feeling the scars of the drills. Behind him, he can hear the four members of his crew making their way along, muttering to each other calmly. His fingers slide over a lip and rise up into empty dark space. He's into the main drift now. He stands up and wades forward. Perfect blackness is cozy and reassuring to him. In it, he can always pretend that he is still a boy, back on Hokkaido. He can make believe that the last few years of his life have never happened. But in fact, he is a grown-up, and he is trapped in a hole in the Philippines and surrounded by armies of demons. He opens the valves on an acetylene headlamp and sparks it into life. He is perfectly capable, by this point, of finding his way around Golgotha in the dark, but his crew is not, and he leaves them far behind. He stubs his toe brutally on a large gold bar that has carelessly been left lying across the iron railway and curses.
"Is everything okay, Lieutenant?"
says one of his crew, 50 meters behind him.
"Fine,"
Goto Dango says, loudly and clearly.
"You four, be careful you do not break your toes on this bar."
So now, Wing and Rodolfo and their men, waiting up ahead, know the number of Nipponese soldiers they have to kill.
"Where are the last few workers?"
one of the crew shouts.
"In the fool's vault."
It takes them several minutes to pick their way through the main vault, because it is packed with treasure. The starry core of a galaxy must look like this. They clamber up the shaft in its ceiling and make their way to the Hall of Glory. Goto Dango finds the bare wires that lead to the electric light bulb and attaches them to the screw terminals on a battery. Running at the wrong voltage, the bulb looks like a tangerine floating in ink.
"Shut off your headlamps,"
Goto Dango says,
"to conserve fuel. I will leave mine burning in case there is an interruption in the power."
He pulls a fistful of white cotton from a sterile box. It is the cleanest, whitest thing he has seen in several years. He pulls it apart into smaller wads like Father Ferdinand, breaking the bread of the Mass, and passes them out to the men who stuff it ritualistically into their ears.
"There is no more time to waste,"
he hollers.
"Captain Noda must be growing impatient out there."
"Sir,"
one of the men says, standing at attention and handing him a pair of wires marked Main Tunnel Demolition.
"Very well,"
Goto Dango says, and screws the wires down to a pair of terminals on a wooden switch box. It seems as though he should say something ceremonious, but nothing comes to mind. Nipponese men are dying all over the Pacific without first getting to make speeches. He clenches his teeth together, shuts his eyes, and twists the switch handle. The shock wave comes through the floor first, whacking the soles of their feet like a flying plank. A moment later, it comes through the air and strikes them like a moving wall of stone. The cotton in the ears seems to accomplish nothing. Goto Dango feels his eyes bounce off the backs of their sockets. All of his teeth feel as though they have been crisply sheared off at the gum line with cold chisels. The wind is all forced out of his lungs. They are empty for the first time since the moment of his birth. Like newborn infants, he and the other man can only writhe and look around themselves in a panic until their bodies learn how to draw breath again. One of the men brought a bottle of sake, which is shattered. They pass around the jagged bottom of the bottle, each man taking a gulp of what remains. Goto Dango tries to pull the cotton out of his ears and finds that the shock wave drove it in so deep that it cannot be extracted. So he merely shouts,
"Check your watches!"
They all do.
"In 2 hours, Captain Noda will demolish the plug on the bottom of the lake and flood the water traps. In the meantime, we have work to do. You all know your jobs. Get to work!"
They all hi, turn on their heels, and go their separate ways. It is the first time that Goto Dango has actually sent men off to their deaths. But they are all dead men anyway, and so he doesn't know how to feel about it. If he still believed in the Emperor, still believed in the war, he would think nothing of it. But if he still believed, he wouldn't be doing what he is about to do. It is important to keep up the appearance that this is a normal operation, and so he descends to the vault to perform his next scheduled duty, inspect what used to be the main drift. The vault is filled with a fog of rock dust around which his windpipe clenches like a fist grabbing a rope. His acetylene lamp only makes the dust glow, giving him a visibility of perhaps 6 inches. All he can see is the bullion right in front of his face, which still glimmers beneath a film of dust and smoke. The shockwave has deranged his formerly neat stacks of crates and bricks, and turned the entire hoard into a rude mound that is still shedding avalanches, seeking its angle of repose. A 75-kilogram gold brick slides down the pile like a runaway boxcar, emerging suddenly from the cloud of dust, and he jumps out of its way. Bits of rock are still sifting down from the crazed ceiling and plinking against his helmet. He scrambles carefully over the heap, breathing through a wad of cotton, until he can see what used to be the main drift. The dynamite has done the right thing, shattered the roof of the drift into billions of shards. Collapsed on the floor, they occupy a larger volume than the same mass of stone did when it was all in one piece. The drift is filled with tons of loose stone, all the way down to the entrance along the Tojo River, where Captain Noda's men are at work even now, concealing the tiny puncture wound behind river rocks. He feels, rather than hears, a small explosion and knows that something is going wrong. No one should be setting off explosions now. Movement in this place is agonizingly slow, like a nightmare when you are trying to run away from a demon. It takes him so long to get back to the Hall of Glory that there is almost no point in doing it. Whatever was happening is over when he arrives. What he sees when he arrives is a group of 3 men waiting for him. Wing, Rodolfo, and the Filipino named Bong.
The soldiers?
All dead, Rodolfo says flatly, irritated by the stupidity of the question.
The others?
One soldier set off a grenade, killed himself and my 2 men, Wing says.
Another soldier heard the grenade and had a knife ready when Augustine came for him,
Bong says. He shakes his head sorrowfully.
I think that Augustine was not ready to kill a man. He hesitated.
Goto Dango stares at Bong, fascinated.
And you?
Bong doesn't understand the question for a moment. Then light dawns.
Oh, no. I did not hesitate, Lieutenant Goto. A Nipponese soldier hurt my sister one time in a very inappropriate way.
Goto Dango stands there silently for a while, until he notices that the other men are all looking at him expectantly. Then he checks his watch. He is shocked to see that only half an hour has gone by since he set off the dynamite.
We have an hour and a half before the water traps are flooded. If we are not in the bubble by then, we will be sealed off with no escape possible,
says Goto Dango.
We go there and wait,
Wing suggests in Shanghainese.
No. Captain Noda listens outside for more explosions,
Goto Dango says, also in Chinese. Then, in English, tells the Filipinos,
We have to set off the demolition charges at certain times, or Noda-san will grow suspicious.
Whoever sets them off will be trapped forever in this chamber,
Rodolfo says, gesturing around them at the Hall of Glory.
We will not set them off from here,
says Goto Dango, pulling the lid from a crate. Inside are several long coils of 2-stranded telephone wire. He hands the coils out to Rodolfo, Wing, and Bong. They understand and begin to splice the new wires onto the ones that terminate here. They retreat through Golgotha in stages, lugging battery packs with them and unrolling the wires as they go, dynamiting the tunnel sections behind them one by one. As they do this, certain oddities of the tunnel system finally become clear to Rodolfo, Wing, and Bong. It becomes fully evident to them for the first time that the entire complex was carefully designed by Goto Dango to serve 2 entirely contradictory purposes. To a loyal Nipponese engineer like Captain Noda, It looks like precisely what he was ordered to build, a vault laced with booby traps. But to the four men sealed inside, Golgotha has a second function. It is an escape machine. As the purposes of certain rooms, drifts, and other features suddenly become clear, they straighten up, blinking, and turn to look at Gododengo with the same expressions as the soldiers wore weeks ago when they discovered the Buddha in the Mercedes. Their destination is the bubble, a niche that Gododengo had them carve out of the stone during the last couple of months. He claimed, to anyone who asked, that it was a water reservoir, put there to increase the deadlines of one of the traps. It is a wide vertical shaft, 4 meters in diameter, that begins in the ceiling of a peripheral drift and goes straight up for a few meters, then dead ends. Ladders still cling to its walls, and by ascending, they can reach a rock ledge big enough to sit on. Canteens of water and boxes of biscuits have already been stocked here by Wing and his men. By the time they reach their seats in the top of the bubble, all of the others are in awe of Gododengo and ready to do whatever he says. He senses this. It fills him with unutterable misery. They have 15 minutes to wait. The others spend it sipping water and nibbling biscuits. Gododengo fills it with self-recrimination.
"I am a loathsome worm," he says. "A traitor, a filthy piece of dog shit, not worthy to clean out the latrines of true soldiers of Nippon. I am bereft, totally cut off from the nation I've betrayed. I am now part of a world of people who hate Nippon and who therefore hate me, but at the same time I am hateful to my own kind. I will stay here and die."
"You are alive," Rodolfo says. "You have saved our lives, and you are rich."
"Rich?"
Wing and Rodolfo and Bong look at each other, confused.
"Yes, of course," Bong says.
Gododengo is still looking nonplussed. Reckoning that he has merely gone deaf or daft from the explosions, Bong reaches into his trousers and pulls out a hand-sewn pouch, teases it open, and displays a healthy double handful of diamonds. Wing and Rodolfo scarcely take note. Gododengo looks away despondently. He himself has saved no treasure, except these men's lives. But that's not why he feels so bad. He had hoped that being thus saved, they would all be noble, and not think of the treasure. But maybe that was too much to hope for. A distant thump lifts them slightly off the ledge, just for a moment. Gododengo feels a strange sensation in his head. The air pressure is beginning to rise. The column of air trapped in the diagonal is being compressed by a piston of water rushing down it from the lake. Captain Noda has dynamited the plug. Gododengo is so excited that he forgets to die. He is an engineer, trapped inside one of his own machines. The machine was designed to keep him alive, and he will never know whether it worked unless it works. After he has achieved that satisfaction, he supposes, he can always kill himself at leisure. He pinches his nose shut, presses his lips together, and begins to blow air into his eustachian tubes, equalizing the pressure. The others follow his lead. All of Golgotha's traps are basically the same. All of them derive their killing power from the pressure of the water communicated down to this level from the bottom of Lake Yamamoto. In any number of places in the complex, false walls have been constructed, designed to be pierced by greedy thieves, or to collapse of their own accord when thieves dig out the sand that holds them up. Then the water will rush in with explosive force and probably crush them before they have a chance to drown. At its Golgotha end, the diagonal tunnel forks again and again, like a river breaking up into distributaries. Gododengo explained it to inspecting officers by likening it to the plumbing inside a modern hotel, which is supplied by a single main that is pressurized by a distant water tower, but which divides into many different pipes that supply pressurized water to taps all over the structure. Golgotha seethes, hisses, and moans as every pipe in its ramified system is pressurized by the deluge unleashed by Captain Noda's dynamite charge. The bubbles of air trapped at the ends of those pipes are seeking escape. Some are leaking out through cracks in the walls, and others are bubbling away into the diagonal. The surface of Lake Yamamoto must be boiling like a cauldron, and Captain Noda must be standing above it, watching the air flee Golgotha, grinning with satisfaction. In moments, the floors of the tunnels are obscured by whirling lagoons of dirty water, and the barrels and rail cars that were left there have begun to rise, bobbing like corks and clanging together. Most of the air trapped in the Golgotha does not, however, come bubbling up out of Lake Yamamoto. Most of it rises towards the bubble, because that is how Goto Dengo planned it. He knows it's working because his ears begin to pop. Eventually the water rises up into the bubble itself, but it rises slowly because the pressure of the air in here has become quite high already. As the water climbs, it further pressurizes the bubble of air in which Goto Dengo and the others are trapped. The pressure of the air rises steadily until it becomes equal to the pressure of the water. Then balance is achieved, and the water cannot rise anymore. Another kind of balance is being reached within their bodies as the compressed air floods into their chests, and the nitrogen in that air seeps through the membranes of their lungs and dissolves into their bloodstreams.
"Now we wait,"
says Goto Dengo, and shuts off his acetylene lamp, leaving them in darkness.
"As long as we do not burn lamps, there is enough air in this chamber to keep us alive for several days. Captain Noda and his men will spend at least that long tidying up the boondock site, erasing all traces of our work and killing themselves. So we must wait, or else his men will only kill us when we appear on the shores of Lake Yamamoto. I would like to spend the time educating you on the subject of Caisson disease, also known as the Bends."
2 days later, they set off one last relatively small dynamite charge, blowing a hole through the wall of the bubble that is large enough to admit a human being. On the other side, the diagonal to Lake Yamamoto begins. Rodolfo is more terrified than anyone else, and so they send him first. Then goes Bong, and then Wing. Finally, Goto Dengo leaves the foul, used-up air of the bubble behind. Within a few moments, they have found their way into the ascending diagonal tunnel. They begin to swim uphill through total darkness. All of them are trailing their hands against the tunnel ceiling, feeling for the opening of the first vertical shaft. Rodolfo is supposed to stop when he feels it, but the others must also be alert in case Rodolfo misses. They thud into one another in the darkness like a loosely connected train bumping to a halt. Rodolfo has stopped. With any luck, he has found the first vertical shaft. Wing finally moves forward, and Goto Dengo follows straight up the vertical shaft and finally into a bulb at its top, where a bubble of air has been trapped. The bulb is just barely wide enough to accommodate four men. They pause there, all jammed together in a cluster of bodies, heaving as they exhale the nitrogen and carbon dioxide-tainted air that they've been living on for the last 60 seconds, and breathe in fresh lungfuls. Goto Dengo feels his ears popping as pressure is relieved. They have covered only a small fraction of the 450 meters that separate Golgotha from the lake horizontally, but half of the 100-meter vertical distance has already been covered. That is, the pressure of the air they are breathing in this chamber is only half of what it was in the bubble. Goto Dengo is not a diver and knows very little of diving medicine, but his father used to speak of how caissons were used to send workers deep underwater to build things or to mine. That is how he learned about caisson disease and how he learned the rule of thumb that most men will not suffer its symptoms if you have them decompress for a while at half the original air pressure. If they stop and breathe for a while, the nitrogen will come out of the tissues. Once this is done, the air pressure may be halved again. In the bubble, the air pressure was 9 or 10 atmospheres. Here in the first chamber, it's more like 5. But there's not much air in this one, just enough to let them breathe for 15 or 20 minutes and bleed nitrogen out of their tissues and get lungfuls of air for the next leg of the swim.
"Okay,"
Goto Dengo says.
"We go."
He finds Rodolfo in the darkness and slaps him encouragingly on the shoulder. Rodolfo takes a series of deep breaths, getting ready, and Goto Dengo recites the numbers that they all know by heart.
25 strokes straight, then the tunnel bends up. 40 strokes up a steep hill. Where the tunnel bends again, you go straight up to the next air chamber.
Rodolfo nods, crosses himself, and then does a somersault in the water and kicks himself downwards. Then goes Bong, then Wing, and finally Goto Dengo. This leg is very long. The last 15 meters is a vertical ascent into the air chamber. Goto Dengo had hoped that the natural buoyancy of their bodies would make this easy, even if they were on the verge of drowning. But as he is kicking up the narrow shaft, pushing frantically on the feet of Wing, who is above him and not going as fast as he would like, he feels a growing panic in his lungs. Finally, he understands that he must fight the urge to hold his breath, that his lungs are filled with air at a much higher pressure than the water around him, and that if he doesn't let some of that air out, his chest will explode. So against his instinct to save that precious air, he lets it boil out of his mouth. He hopes that the bubbles will pass by the faces of the men above him and give them the idea too. But shortly after he does it, they all stop moving entirely. For perhaps 10 seconds, Goto Dengo is trapped in total darkness in a water-filled vertical hole in the rock that is not much wider than his own body. Of all the things he has experienced in the war, this is the worst. But just as he gives up and prepares to die, they begin moving again. They are half dead when they get to the breathing chamber. If Goto Dengo's calculations were right, then the pressure in here should be no more than 2 or 3 atmospheres. But he is beginning to doubt those calculations. When he has breathed in enough air to restore full consciousness, he's aware of sharp pains in his knees, and it's clear from the sounds that the others are making that they are suffering the same way.
"This time, we wait as long as we can," he says.
The next leg is shorter, but it's made more difficult by the pain in their knees. Again, Rodolfo goes first. But when Goto Dengo rises into the next air chamber, about 1.5 atmospheres above normal, only Bong and Wing are there.
"Rodolfo missed the opening," Bong says. "I think he went too far, up the ventilation shaft."
Goto Dengo nods. Only a few meters beyond where they turned into this passage is a ventilation shaft that goes all the way to the surface. It has a sharp sideways jog in the middle that Goto put there so that when Captain Noda filled it up with rubble, which he has presumably done by now, the diagonal tunnel, their escape route, would not be blocked. If Rodolfo went up that shaft, he found a cul-de-sac with no air bubble in the top. Goto Dengo doesn't have to tell the others that Rodolfo is dead. Bong crosses himself and says a prayer. Then they stay for a while and take advantage of the air that Rodolfo should be sharing. The pain in Goto Dengo's knees becomes sharper, but after a while it plateaus.
"From here, only small changes in altitude, not much need to decompress. Mostly we swim for distance now," he says.
They still have more than 300 horizontal meters to cover, pierced with 4 more shafts for air. The last of these doubles as a legitimate ventilation shaft. So from there on, it is just swimming and resting, until finally the walls of the tunnel peel away from them, and they find themselves in Lake Yamamoto. Goto Dengo breaks the surface and does nothing for a long time but tread water and breathe clean air. It is nighttime, and for the first time in a year, Boondock is quiet, except for the sound of Bong, kneeling on the shore of the lake, making the sign of the cross and mumbling prayers as fast as his lips can move. Wing has already departed, without so much as a goodbye. This is shocking to Goto Dengo, until he realizes what it means. He, too, is free to go. As far as the world knows, he is dead, all of his obligations discharged. For the first time in his life, he can do whatever he wants. He swims to the shore, gets up on his feet, and starts walking. His knees hurt. He cannot believe that he has come through all of this, and his only problem is sore knees.